From KLCC Studios, this is Oregon on the Record.
I'm Michael Dunn. If you were to survey Eugene residents about their favorite services that the city offered, past and present, I bet a large majority of people would say CAHOOTS, the city's nationally known mobile crisis program. Yet, even though it was extremely popular and impactful, the service was recently shuttered. Today on the show, we'll learn how the city is looking to find a replacement. Then, in the second part of the show, we'll check in with our own Love Cross about her series, Oregon Ready. That's next on Oregon on the Record. CAHOOTS was an incredibly popular program in Eugene and served as a model for cities around the nation. But such is the brutal reality of municipal budget cuts that such a popular program was shut down. Today on the show, we talked to a Register Guard reporter about the city's attempt to get an alternative up and running. However, no matter what they do, you'll hear that it won't be an exact replacement. Alan Torres, a reporter with the Eugene Register Guard. Alan, always appreciate you coming on. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah. Read your story about, you know, two very different proposals to fill CAHOOTS services in Eugene. Let's start with this. Just for folks who may not remember, can you remind folks what CAHOOTS did and why it's come to pass that they're no longer providing services in Eugene?
So the first part of that question, CAHOOTS was a longtime service here in Eugene, contracted through the Whitebird Clinic, that provided kind of a wide range of services. The short answer is that they responded to, mental health and behavioral health and drug-related 911 calls as, you know, an alternative to the police and fire departments. They provided, you know, medical transport, overdose care, behavioral health care, and wound care, lots of different things. And the program kind of unwound last year. And I have a story from last June detailing exactly how that happened. But the short answer is kind of everyone wanted someone else to pay for it. And so then at the end of the day, the city and Whitebird just chose to terminate that contract.
Yeah. Since that time, when they terminated the contract, to now, were you able to kind of find any data or just any anecdotal information about how the lack of CAHOOTS service has been felt, the impact on the streets in Eugene?
The fire department wrote a report last fall aiming to answer that question. And what they said is that, you know, that sort of total volume to the police and like the total 911 call volume hasn't dramatically increased, or the total volume of calls that police and fire are getting dispatched to didn't dramatically increase. But a lot of calls that used to go to CAHOOTS are now either going to the police or fire department or just not getting answers. Specifically, it kind of identified five gaps. The report mentioned mid-acuity behavioral response, which are calls like, you know, someone is agitated or generalized disorganized or disruptive behavior, calls that are not bad enough to call Lane County Mobile Crisis, but are still, you know, bad enough that they require a response from someone, usually police, now that CAHOOTS isn't here. They mentioned that there's not really a non-emergency transport option for these people. They mentioned kind of social service calls are not really getting a response now. They mentioned complications on how youth facing behavioral health crisis are impacted based on factors like the service hours of Lane County's mobile crisis service. And they also mentioned sort of the aftercare and proactive outreach work that isn't really happening without CAHOOTS.
I see. So obviously some real impacts. So given that the city wanted to try and develop organically or have outside organizations try and fill this gap. So tell us, what was the city's plan that led to these two proposals coming in? What did the council say? Okay, we're going to open this up for a bid. Take us through the process of which we've gotten to this point, which is we now have two proposals to fill the service gap.
I suppose this started back in May when City Council adopted its budget for the biennium. They designated $500,000 for in one-time funding for alternative response, which is a line item that has historically gone to Whitebird for the CAHOOTS program. And then the fire department did that study that I mentioned and put out this request for proposals for organizations to provide alternative response services in Eugene.
And Alan, with regard to these proposals, as you point out in your article, the city's request for proposal was not necessarily asking for the same things that CAHOOTS used to do. Is that correct?
Right. Yeah. The city put out this request for proposal that approximately describes the downtown peer navigation work done by Ideal Option currently. Ideal Option is one of the bidders for this contract and currently does peer navigation. And what that means is they talk with people who are experiencing homelessness and help them navigate the various systems, the housing system, the healthcare system, the court systems, in order to help them better their situations, which is kind of adjacent to what CAHOOTS did, but still pretty far. You know, they're not handling, right, like these 911 behavioral health calls and things like that that CAHOOTS was known for.
Okay. Let me reintroduce you to the audience, talking with Alan Torres. He's a reporter with the Register Guard, and his story about the proposals that the city's reviewing to replace CAHOOTS in some fashion. So let's get to the proposals. Talk about the two entities that filed this request for or answered this request for proposal, and talk about what they say they'll do and how they're different.
Yeah. So, I mean, I just mentioned the first one, right? Ideal Option is this organization based out of Salem that provides peer navigators who help the homeless, you know, navigate the various systems. And they currently do that work only downtown. And the city said, you know, we want this work to kind of expand to other parts of town, mostly in West Eugene. And their proposal is a fairly straightforward, you know, we're going to take the work we're currently doing downtown and do that in more parts of the city. And then the other organization is Willamette Valley Crisis Care, which is an organization founded by the people who used to work for Whitebird and got laid off or quit after Whitebird ended CAHOOTS in Eugene. And that organization has proposed doing that peer navigation work through an agreement with Restored Connections, another local nonprofit who kind of joined with WVCC to submit this bid, but also do work comparable to what Cahoots was doing at the same time.
So it sounds like these proposals are very different, different in scope. Are they still, it sounds like the latter proposal was saying they'd do more. But I imagine this is a finite budget. So what happens next? Does the city council then consider these proposals and then we'll have a winner at some point?
So I will, a slight caveat that I haven't actually read the proposals.
Got it.
I submitted a public records request for the proposals and the city denied that request, but the people associated with these nonprofits did helpfully describe their proposals for me.
Okay.
So I don't actually have the exact dollar figures, but what I do have is that the city set $500,000 as the budget for this contract, but said, if you go over that, we will do we could do a supplemental budget process. Supplemental budget is when city council edits the budget outside of its normal every other May editing the budget that it normally does.
Okay.
And so then the other part of your question is that this is a staff decision, not a council decision.
I see.
Staff will pick between the two contracts. But if they pick WVCC, because WVCC went over budget in its proposal and Ideal Option did not, the city council would have to get involved and edit the budget.
Okay. So people listening right now might have questions about with this, if the proposal is awarded and they get to serve, it's not going to be Cahoots. It's going to be different and in all honesty, less services than people got used to with Cahoots. Is that a fair assessment?
I think certain people, I think that's one side that a lot of people have. And right, I should clarify about Willamette Valley Crisis Care's proposal. Even though they are proposing a Cahoots-like service, they are proposing 10 hours a day. So, you know, not the 24/7 service that Cahoots was providing. And so that is one fair take. The other side of that is what the city has said, which is that a lot of the things Cahoots was doing are now being done by other agencies. There's Lane County's Mobile Crisis Service, and there's also the fire department has a community paramedicine program now that it didn't have before. And there are various other ways in which the police or fire departments have gotten more creative over the years in how they respond to calls. So there is an argument to be made that Cahoots-like services are being provided by the government.
I see. Alan, is there any timetable for this? As you mentioned, it's a staff decision. Council may have to get involved if there's budgetary changes or whatnot. But what are we looking at here? How long might it take before the city of Eugene gets something like Cahoots back?
Yeah, so the city has said that it plans to respond by March, by the end of this month. And then they've asked the bidders to be ready to roll out within 60 days of being awarded the contract. Okay. So if all goes according to schedule, then the end of May / the beginning of June would be when the new program rolls out.
Okay. Well, we'll see how it goes. Alan Torres, a reporter with the Eugene Register Guard, talking about the potential to replace Cahoots in some form. Alan, really appreciate you taking some time to talk with us.
Thank you.
Love Cross has been informing us how to be ready for the next big disaster, and today we talk radio communications. KLCC's Oregon Ready series is helping all of us take one step each month toward becoming 2 weeks ready for a disaster. Today we're talking about something a lot of people think they'll never need until suddenly they do: emergency radios. KLCC's own Love Cross is on her own personal quest to become better prepared for disasters, and she's here with us now. Hi, Love.
Hi, Michael. Thanks so much for having me back to talk about Oregon Ready.
Yeah, so in your reporting this month, you focus on radio, not just the emergency broadcast radio, but everything from walkie-talkies to ham operators. Talk about how critical that communication link will be.
Well, I really started looking into this because I'm following eWeb's pledge to prepare. That maps to the state's Be 2 Weeks Ready initiative. And March's checklist includes securing a battery-powered emergency radio. Now, I already have a few of these in my house. Of course, they're all tuned to KLCC. I've actually been on the other end of that radio when we've had previous disasters here in Eugene, like 2024's ice storm. Took the time to let the community know the situation on broadcast radio. But as I got more into March's checklist, I learned that radio isn't just about receiving alerts. It's a whole communication ecosystem. It really kicks in when phones and internet go down. And in a real disaster, that's very likely to happen. And these systems really rely on volunteers.
You know, full disclosure, Love, my wife is one of these volunteers and a ham radio operator. But tell folks, you know, who these volunteer radio people are.
That takes a true commitment to do that, Michael. I mean, she has to be licensed and do the full thing. Yep. There are radio networks all over the state. We have a pretty strong one here in Lane County. In Eugene specifically, it's called Eugene MCOM. They're a volunteer emergency communications network. About 100 people are involved in that right now. I talked with Andy Davis, who's one of the volunteers keeping this system running. And just like other volunteer radio networks, they practice a weekly radio net just to make sure everyone is fluent and ready.
KJ7CNL, you're next.
This is KJ7CNL. Name is Matt. Mike Alpha Tango Tango. Frequency for Northwest District, which I'm in, is 441.550 megahertz.
KK7UIQ.
So during a major event, they actually self-deploy. Nobody has to call them. They just start gathering neighborhood information, and then they radio that into Eugene's Emergency Operations Center.
So that's going to mean literally walking neighborhoods, isn't it?
Yeah, I learned quite a bit about this. They have what they call damage assessment teams. That's two or three volunteers who will walk an area, checking on their neighbors, and then reporting what they see. When you think about it, it's really hyper-local, real-time intelligence that then gets passed up the chain to the city's emergency managers.
You know, as part of your series, you're asking for our audience to send in questions, and someone did. They asked, do I need to become a ham radio operator to be useful in emergency? What do you say to that?
Well, that's a great question, and the answer is no. You can start with a simple FRS radios, those little walkie-talkies you can buy, you know, at sporting goods stores. FRS stands for Family Radio Services, by the way. They're cheap, they're easy, they work just within your neighborhood, so that's great. It's also a limitation. So if you want more range, the next level up is GMRS, which stands for General Mobile Radio Service, and that requires an FCC license, but just a fee, no test. And then ham radio, that's the big leagues. It has much farther range, and yes, that one does require a license and a test from the FCC.
You talk to people in a very sensitive area, the Mackenzie River Valley, where communications, they're just a lot more fragile, aren't they?
They really are, and the Holiday Farm fire really burned up a lot of the infrastructure that people used to communicate there, and so that is something that they continue to deal with. I spoke with Sarah Hunter. She's part of Mackenzie Community Communications, and after the 2020 Holiday Farm fire, and again after the 2024 ice storm, they realized their one road in and out could be easily blocked, and the power and cell systems go down fast. So radio is literally their lifeline in those situations.
Let's hear that clip, that moment from Sarah.
If you use a radio to check on your neighbors, you don't have to go out in the dark when it's icy, when it's cold. So you don't slip and find on the way home and find your neighbors are fine, but then have a fire department or EMTs have to come after you because you were doing the great thing, checking on your neighbors, but there's a way to do it safely, and there's a way to do it not quite as safely.
I think that was kind of eye-opening for me that handheld radios can be a way to keep yourself from becoming the next emergency. And something else Sarah stressed was that especially for rural communities, just knowing your neighbors and knowing who has radios can really save time and, it, you know, in the bigger picture, help keep people safe.
So, love, for someone listening right now who wants to take this first step, what should they do today?
Well, Eugene M. Com actually encourages beginners. There's a wealth of information online at eugenemcom.org. They have starter guides, a place to sign up as a volunteer, and information on how to choose your first radio. You can also start by simply giving one to a neighbor and practicing basic communication. You know, can you hear me? What channel are you on? It's simple, but in a crisis, that knowledge can make a huge difference.
Okay, love. So you're continuing on this personal preparedness journey. What's next?
Well, looking ahead to April, one of the checklist items involves emergency sanitation. Yes, how to deal with pee and poo, Michael, when we might not have working toilets. So I am delving into that world for the next couple of weeks.
Love Cross will literally go anywhere to get the story. Well, we'll sort of look forward to that.
Well, yes, we will look forward to that. This whole two bucket system that you will learn all about next month. I'll look forward to coming back right here on Oregon on the Record and filling you in. And of course, we continue to gather questions about disaster preparedness. If you have questions, you can send them to questions@klcc.org. And of course, follow along at klcc.org/OregonReady.
Love, we really appreciate you doing this story, this series. Thanks for coming in and talking with us.
Thanks for having me, Michael.
That's the show for today. All episodes of Oregon on the Record are available as a podcast at klcc.org. Tomorrow on the show, is AI replacing everything? Well, we'll talk with the Eugene Ballet about a new ballet that takes on this existential question. I'm Michael Dunn, host of Oregon on the Record. Thanks for listening.